Swiss Army Man tells a rather unconventional buddy story. There's Hank, played by Paul Dano, who's on a deserted island and is about to hang himself when he sees a corpse played by Daniel Radcliffe. Then Hank rides the corpse across the ocean using its gaseous buildup as a motor. There's a lot of farting in the movie. The corpse then comes back to life. Hank calls him Manny. And then they spend the rest of the movie trying to find their way home with plenty of meditations on life, love, death, friendship, and what's socially acceptable. So yes. I thought I would ask the most important question first, which is, how did you incorporate the farting motif into the score, if it was incorporated at all?
I think that there's only one time that the directors asked us. It's the last scene of the movie with music. And it's when he's laying in the ocean, and there's a moment, and they were like, can you really, like, push, like, almost a French horn sound to, like, really drive home the fart joke?
And it ended up being, we were like, no, that's ridiculous. But maybe we can do, like, a low fog horn. So now it just sounds like a, I don't know, like a that sound you hear in every trailer now. It's like, does that come across well on radio?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, if you do it again, I think. Perfect.
I didn't know it was a performance as well.
Well, you didn't need to bring in your instruments because it seems the score is mostly a cappella, mostly voices.
It is, yeah.
So why did you decide to do it that way?
Well, the directors came to me when they first talked about the idea for the movie and asked for songs. They said, you know, ultimately we see this thing taking place entirely inside of the mind of Paul Dano, so we want it to be a cappella and only using human sounds, you know? And it's like, okay, well, what does that mean? And then that took a lot of discussions of what was off limits and what we were able to use and what were our tools that we could use. And so then bringing Robert in to be a part of it, we started to just sort of chip away at what could be cool about that without it being a traditional kind of like doo-wop a cappella thing.
So then did you just go into the studio and try to figure out what the potential for what you could do with your voice is? Because I kind of imagine recording it was just people coming in and out of a room just being like, bomb, 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 and then coming in and doing something else.
It was like, it was actually the setup was Robert at the desk, and I was, because we were recording at such a low volume, I was just standing in the room without headphones with a microphone, and we would start with a low bass synth, and the whole movie's in the same key, so we would start with the note. We'd have that in there and start to stack things, start to have movements and start to feel where things are going and change chords. And it was just slowly chipping away at something until it sounded, you know, beautiful. And there's different types of songs on the record or on the soundtrack. There's songs with lyrics that are more traditional that have verses and choruses. And then a ton of it's really just meditative sort of floating around in your brain on headphones. There's a ton of really cool kind of panning stuff that goes left to right, and you're just sort of, I don't know, you're in the mind of a really imaginative, crazy person.
And there's the one sort of the lyrical motif that repeats, which I'll modify for radio. Crazy, I'm crazy. Maybe, just maybe, I'll make it alone. Rescued, I thought I was rescued. But you're just a dead dude. I'm going to die.
yes.
And I was just kind of wondering about, because it seems, you know, with the Daniels, the filmmakers, and then also you have Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano singing on the album. What was kind of the synergy between those three groups of, like, who was writing? Where did the ideas come from? When did your ideas come into that?
Well, okay, so there were several parts to it. The first part was we had to write a bunch of songs before they shot the movie, so that, in particular, that song that you're talking about is called Cave Ballad. They had to have that music so that Paul could sing while he was acting. So we wrote like seven songs before the movie started. They go down and film the movie. The guys sing that stuff. Then afterwards, they send us all the footage, and we start really kind of like going into every little nook and cranny of the score. So that takes us several months to get that right. Then in January, we go to LA for 2 weeks before Sundance and just worked for like 2 weeks mixing it, getting it all in, getting their vocals all together. It was really crazy. And then like got it the day before we could submit it to Sundance, got it in. And then 3 days later, we were at Sundance watching the premiere.
And the Daniels were, they always had a vision from a cappella only. So as we were doing all stages, the before shooting, while they were editing and all that stuff, were very hands-on with, we like that, try this direction, or you did what we wanted, but now we've changed our mind. Yeah. So it was...
And when we were in the same room with them, that was when a lot of, like, some finalized ideas could be put together, where they came down and we just, that's when we worked on Cotton Eye Joe and Jurassic Park, which we didn't want to do. Not because we didn't want to do it, we just thought there was no point in recording a cover of Jurassic Park because there was no chance we were going to get, like, clearance to use that theme song in this movie. And it ends up, I got a FaceTime call at, like, 3 a.m. from one of the directors, and it's like, John Williams heard it, he loves it, we can use it, which was really cool.
The Cotton Eye Joe and the Jurassic Park, I think those are two beautiful covers of songs you would not expect to ever sound pretty.
Right. That's the whole idea with the movie, too, is that, you know, Cotton Eye Joe, the joke is that Paul's stuck on this island and that's the song that's in his head, is, you know, like the old, like, 90s dance rednecks version of Cotton Eye Joe. And it's the same thing with the farting, and it's the same thing with other things that I'll modify for radio in the movie that, you know, are natural human things that we've been told to be ashamed of, and we've been told, you know, and the Daniels' whole idea was, can we find beauty in it, in things that otherwise you wouldn't really think there would be beauty in. So.
And so they took the acting, the music, the shots, the scene, and tried to wrap all of those things in beauty so that you can hopefully get past writing Daniel Radcliffe's naked, farting body through the ocean.
And was this the first movie that you've ever worked on before?
Yeah.
So that must have been quite a learning curve.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was like a year. We worked on it for like 13 months, and it was like school for sure. We were just learning how to communicate with each other, how to create music without a click track, without a tempo, and just going like, all right, let's make something that feels like it's moving fast and slow.
Normally with music, it's easy to sit at a guitar or piano and you can create
a vibe.
Yeah, a vibe, a bunch of notes at once, create a chord. And so much of this was like, here's our root note, like, let's get a bunch of these tools and then play around with them and see how we can make chords shift, how we can, you know, create a swing to things.
And you said it well earlier that you imagined it was like trying to see what you can do with the human voice. It was definitely like that. I'd be like, Robert, don't turn around while I'm trying to sing this part because I just look crazy.
And do you think that, you know, being invited to make music in a movie, does that mean you've reached a new peak in your musical career?
I think so. I mean, I think anytime you can do something different that's innovative and isn't exactly what would be expected next, I would consider that a success. And I mean, we are technically, and I'm doing bunny ears here, composers. So you tell me if that's a step up.
Yeah, no, that does bring up an interesting point. I mean, why do you think there is that difference between composer versus songwriter?
I think one thing that we learned through this is how to create music for another art form. So when you're making music, you're thinking like people are going to hear this and they're going to have headphones on and that's going to be their focus. Whereas when you're making it for a movie, you're either supposed to sit back, amp up the scene, or you're supposed to steal it and make it this grand thing. So it's this like push and pull between those two art forms that took probably 7 months for us to realize what it actually was. And once that switch turned, it was kind of exciting because we were able to take some of the pressure off of us and realize that the Daniels already dealt with that. And so we just need to complement it.
Mentally for me, and on the songwriting side, it was just about, I still had to mentally think about them as songs, just because that's, I guess, the way that I've been thinking about it forever. But it was really about like, okay, they're just really different songs. They don't have any verses. They don't have choruses. They're 45 seconds long and they need to, you know, they don't ever repeat anything. And it was really cool and eye-opening that we could create emotion and create feelings from not following the way that we've done it before. So it's sort of, I think it's going to help every aspect of music we make moving forward too.
And I guess on the Daniels, the filmmakers part, why did they approach you specifically?
Well, we had worked together on a music video, Simple Math, which was their first big, which are for our band, Manchester. It was their first big video. They won a bunch of awards for it. It like ended up playing at a bunch of film festivals, and we had an amazing time collaborating on it. The reason they wanted to work with us in the first place and that they had submitted a treatment is that they were fans of our band, and they felt like they should at least ask and see if I was interested. And of course, I was interested. Read the script, sent them the very first song, which is actually the last song on the score. And they sent us an email back that said that is single-handedly the best, biggest contribution that's been made to the movie since we wrote the script. Our like jaws dropped. They're like, we definitely want you to do this. And if you're into it, we'd love you to score the whole thing. It's essentially how it happened. So I don't know. I think they wanted a group of people that weren't necessarily going to just step in and score it and go like, okay, cool, here, you know, I'm this guy who scores movies and here's your score. I think they wanted somebody to like get in and work really hard, because as we were doing it, things were changing musically or like affecting the actual movie and how the movie's, you know, being played, and the music is really used as a third character. So I think it was a combination of that hard work. They knew we'd be dedicated to it and then we could make it pretty.
Do you ever think Manchester Orchestra will perform any of these songs?
It would be amazing too. We've been asked that a ton. It's just there are some songs that have over 100 voices on it, and you know,
there'd have to be an interpretation.
But I would love, I mean, if we had the finance to get a choir and all that stuff together, it would be incredible.
Well, thank you two so much for coming in and talking about the music in Swiss Army.
Thank you for having us.